Well, CeCe, as you well know, baseball season is in full swing, and the New York Yankees are keeping their eye on the ball.
And as things are heating up, there's nothing better to quench your thirst than an ice-cold, refreshing Pepsi.
So if you're going to the ballpark for a tailgate, or you just plan on watching the game from home with a couple of buddies, be sure to grab a Pepsi.
Because it pairs perfectly with game day grub like hot dogs, burgers, brats, pizzas, peanut, and popcorn.
Thirsty yet?
So remember, when you're stocking up on Pepsi, complete your roster with other delicious options like Diet Pepsi and Pepsi Zero Sugar.
Well, I like the idea of Pepsi Zero Sugar.
I like that.
Gonna have to check it out. It's sure to be a winning lineup. Pepsi is a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees and this podcast.
And 95 was a little different because they're you know, it was just a different club. I was the only rookie on the team at the beginning of the season. Jeet came up, Georgie came up towards the end of the year. Mariano came up and made a couple of starts,
right,
and then got sent back down. So I was in 90, like, I felt like I was, like, on an island all by myself. I mean, it was we had a rough crew of characters. And, I mean, man, I was scared. And back then, you know, Buck, if you were a rookie, he didn't say a word to you.
He didn't talk to you.
He did not talk to me. Literally, I'd be standing in the outfield, and he would walk right by me and walk to the next guy that was standing 2 feet.
What's up, everybody? This is CeCe Sabathia here.
I'm Ryan Rucco, the R2C2 podcast.
We are back.
This is going to be fun for us, man, because this is one of your teammates, one of your good friends.
Yes.
It's you know, it's secretly, even though you're not supposed to be a fanboy, it's my favorite athlete growing up. We get Andy Pettit in the building. Andy, thank you for being with us, man.
You bet, man. Looking forward to being here with you guys.
You know, we're in Houston, and I was looking back at some notes from 2 years ago when I was here, and you were struggling at the time. You hadn't yet figured out, right, this new style of pitching. And I had written down a comment from you where you said, you're talking about Andy reaching out to you and whatnot, and you said, if Andy hadn't told me how close I was to figuring this out, I probably would have quit by now. How did you know he was so close to kind of figuring it out and getting on the groove? Because last year you had a really good year. This year you've been really good. You clearly have figured out this new style. But how did you know he was close to getting there?
Well, first of all, I just knew what kind of competitor he was and what kind of man he was, the determination that he had, and just the kind of fierce competitor he is. And I just knew that he was going to figure it out as long as he stayed with it and stuck with it. And then, of course, I saw signs of it. You know, you just saw flashes of the cutter and what it was doing and how he was able to pitch with it. And it was just a matter of getting used to it. I mean, you know, he threw so hard and dominated the game for so long, a certain way of pitching. And, I mean, he kind of had to change it completely. I never had the fortunes to be able to throw upper 90s. And,
right.
And I never threw one pitch where I just threw it and said, here you go, buddy, hit it, you know?
Right.
I mean, I always was trying to hit a corner. I was scared to throw the ball in the middle of the plate. And, you know, that kind of hurt me sometimes in my career because I got a little tentative when you get hit around sometimes. So I just knew. And then, of course, with everything else, not only the cutter, his changeup is awesome. He throws it at any time he wants to. But again, I just watch him. I see him pitch. That was another thing that I never could really do like that. So C just had so many things going for him. I just felt like that there was no way that man's not going to succeed. And that was really, you know, really all those things together was the reason why I knew that he would be successful and be successful for as long as he wants to, as long as his body holds up and he stays healthy.
As long as his body holds up.
How long is that body going to hold up, CC?
Might not make it through the bullpen today.
Hey, well, I'm there, though. You're starting to get that age where I know I hear you talk about the hot tub now like I had to.
I used to laugh at him when I first got here. His routine, like, was so long and, like, everything he had to do just to go play catch. Now, for me, it takes me hours. Like, if it stretches at 4:30, like, every day I got to get a tub at 3:30. Like, it literally takes me hours just to go play catch. Like, it's crazy. It just come full circle, man.
That's
like
your Rob Dibble checklist you told. Was it Huno? Who told? No, Dave Burba.
He
taught you the checklist, right? So you can get,
like,
on the mound not thinking.
Like in between starts, like if you worked out, if you played catch, if you did your bullpen right.
Yeah.
You know, like a little checklist. Yeah. So if you get on the mound, you got like your checklist so you can feel good about, you know, going
for sure
out there.
You put in all the work to be prepared for your start, right?
Yeah.
So you can just go perform.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
As you get older, 90% of the time is trying to take care of yourself and get yourself ready to perform.
Yes,
oh, my gosh. Yes, is it? But is it the arm that hurts? Is it the leg? Is it just everything?
I think it's just different for different people. It's always my lower half for me.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's never. I mean, I've only had a little bit of trouble with my elbow, a couple years ago, but everything for me is lower half, like my feet, my knees, my ankles. So
that's how I was also. Yeah. I think because we're bigger men,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as much as we're moving around and running and lifting and stuff like that, I think your lower half, and I mean, obviously we have to use our lower half every pitch and generate a lot of force. Our bodies coming down on our legs and our feet and stuff like that. I mean, it's a lot of wear and tear on your body, that's for sure.
What kind of text messages would Andy send, or even still, does he send when he's watching one of your starts? And
hey, pick up the phone. I'm trying yeah. to get a hold of you.
So let's go there. Let's go ahead and go there first.
All go right? there first.
So
yes.
I have a few close friends, right? Yeah. All right. I consider C one of them, right? So I'll give you, here's what I did with Lance Berkman, who is real similar to CC. But I haven't done this with C yet. I don't know why. Lance, if you don't text me back when I text you, our friendship is over. I hadn't went there yet. And Lance has been very good about it, I hadn't went there yet with C.
But he scares me, though. Like, if I get a text from Andy, I'm like, all right, I have to reply within the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
Anybody else, I could just be like, all right, I'll play whenever. But like,
I know. I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes.
Man, I know he's on his phone. Yeah. Right? Dude, I know you got your phone in your hand.
But what is
see my text message come up, and he's like, I don't feel like
it's
replying.
Not that. And you know what's so bad is that everybody always sees me with my phone, too. So it's like, they know that I have my phone.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But like, I'm either talking to my kids or Amber or somebody. Oh. Like,
it's
checking Instagram.
This is a reputation out of because Derek told us the same thing about this guy.
No, we can do 100 guys. It's the same thing.
Well, that makes me feel better. But that's for some reason, I want special treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why. Well, I want special treatment.
Well, you know what? It sounds like you feel like you do have to at least get back to Andy.
Yeah,
like
I have to get back to him.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. That. All right, so once you call Andy back or you do respond to his text message, what kind of things like is Andy saying to you about?
I think it's always so informative for me to always text him and have a relationship with him just because he knows me so well and he watched me for, a long time together. And, like, he just got into it right there. He can talk. He knows pitching.
Yeah.
And obviously being a left-hander, I do a lot of things similar to him now. So, I mean, it's only natural and it's easy for us to have a good relationship, I feel like, and it's not even just baseball. I come to him for everything, when I was struggling with the alcohol, I always felt comfortable coming to him and talking to him about different things like that. So I think it's just been an awesome relationship for me to have, I thank you a lot for being able to be there for me, this whole time. It's been great. And I'm trying to do the same thing with Monty. I'm trying to be what you are for me to
there
Monty.
You go.
But it's a little harder because he's
he's just know, all about
well,
ball.
I mean, let's just put it like this. He asked Andy, is he coming to the dugout yesterday?
That was great.
That's kind of adorable, right?
Oh, it was awesome. They were all the starting pitchers, and I'm in my shorts and just a t-shirt, and they're all walking down. They're heading down, to the dugout, and the game's, like, going to start in 5 minutes. And he's like, turns around, he goes, Andy, you coming down the dugout? And I was like,
yo,
I can't go down there. It's not allowed.
I don't blow him up, though. I just put my hand down and keep walking.
It was great. It was good.
There are a lot of people who are watching Montgomery and comparing him to you. And, mm-hmm. and kind of, just – he's got – I don't know. What would you say? You had four pitches?
I first came up, I only had three. I had a fastball, a curveball, and a changeup, and so –
You didn't have the cutter right away.
I didn't have the cutter. I didn't learn the cutter until 1996.
Who taught you the cutter?
Billy Connors started it in 19. I actually started throwing it a little bit in bullpens late in 95, and I literally threw it in bullpens for almost a year before I broke it out.
Wow.
And in 1996, I threw it enough in my bullpens and was feeling comfortable enough with it. In 1996, at the All-Star break, is when I broke it out.
Wow, yeah. So you broke it out at the All-Star break that year.
Yeah.
Because you were having a great year already.
Yeah.
That must have been a little, nerve-wracking to just introduce a new pitch.
I had immediate, success with it. Because, at that time, the league had already seen me for a year and a half. So I'd already faced every team. And it's just crazy when you all of a sudden start doing a little something different to big league hitters, it freaks them out.
They freak out.
Yeah,
right?
They freak out. they're all immediately going back in, going, "Dude, he's throwing a cutter now." You know, because mostly it was I was trying to run the ball away to righties. I would throw a changeup, and I had a 12-6 curveball. You know, so all of a sudden, if something's cutting in hard on you, I mean, it's a game changer,
right?
You know?
Almost have to deal with everything.
Exactly.
So I bet you that just like gave you super confidence.
It did.
Like, going out there.
It did. Gave me a lot of confidence. But in my case, and I've said this before, I started getting so confident in it, and I started throwing it so much that I lost the feel for my changeup and my two-seamer. And, you know, a huge part of me wishes that maybe I didn't even start throwing it, even though I had great success. I mean, obviously, I love the career that I had, and I'm thankful for that so much. But for 3 or 4 years, and it's probably why I had so much elbow trouble, is when you're really trying to cut and throw hard stuff inside and you're throwing with every ounce of energy you got every pitch like that, because it's a hard cutter that you're trying to throw in there. Man, it's so much easier just to throw a nice changeup on the outside corner and get somebody to roll over it. You know, it's working real hard. And C knows if you make mistakes in there, I mean, the hitters are so good, they're going to hit it, you're going to get hurt. So it's a pretty stressful pitch to throw in there also.
You throwing a cutter?
Yeah. Well, he taught me the cutter. We were here, during that time.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
so that's
but
where
I'm
you
not like
it.
Him. Like, he taught me it, and I threw it the next start.
Yeah.
I threw it one time good in the bullpen. I'm like, all right, I got it.
But you had to go that direction. I was only 23, 24 years old. And, you know, they're like, hey, let's develop this and let's work on this, stuff like that. So it was just something to help me. We were hoping, you know, obviously, to have a longer career.
Didn't you throw a knuckleball early in your career, too?
I did.
That's crazy.
My nickname in the minors was Nuxie. That was my nickname. Yeah,
was it?
It was.
Did you throw it in the games?
I did. Oh, yeah. When I came, I didn't have a changeup. So when I signed with the Yankees, I threw a fastball, a curveball, and a knuckleball. And I threw it with four fingers, and I threw it as hard as I could.
Oh, so it was like a split then?
It was like a split.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I went to rookie ball in Tampa, Florida, and Hoyt Wilhelm,
Hall of Fame knuckleballer,
right, was my pitching coach. And they tried to get me the player development guys, the pitching gurus, stuff like that. They wanted me to stop throwing it in the Gulf Coast League. And Hoyt said, "I'm not making this guy stop throwing it. It's great, it's you know?
This is
and
my
so,
guy."
Yeah. And so anyhow, I threw it. I would get two strikes on those guys. And those guys were – I mean, I was young, too. I was 19. But they were very aggressive. Yeah. So, I mean, if I got a couple of strikes, I would throw a knuckleball as hard as I could in there, and it would bounce in front of home plate, and everybody would swing and miss. And, I mean, I had great numbers down in Tampa.
That's crazy.
Ended up getting moved up to Oneonta, New York, and had I did real well there.
And you were still throwing the knuckleball?
I was still throwing it, yes. And then when they sent me to Instructional League that year after – Oneonta, and they told me, they called me in the office and they said, "You're not throwing the knuckleball anymore." They said, "You're going to Instructional League, you're going to throw a changeup every other pitch, and we don't care if you do good or bad, but you're going to develop a circle changeup. And if you pitch 10 years in the big leagues, you can break your knuckleball back out." That's exactly what they told me.
But you never did.
I never broke it back out. I lost the feel.
No,
for
it was terrible by the time I got around it.
Yeah.
It was,
I tried to throw it.
When you're playing catch?
I was trying to throw it because, I mean, there was times when I was searching to figure out how to get somebody out. I needed to reinvent myself.
But I feel like even for me playing high school, that used to be the thing to do playing catch, right? Everyone would try their knuckleball out, right?
Yeah.
Now, using it in minor leagues, a different story.
Oh,
but, you know, you brought up 96. I'm still mad that Pat Hankin won that Cy Young in 96, man. Andy should have won that. I don't know if you ever – you've accomplished so much in your career. I don't know if that ever bothers you. But you should have won that 96
Cy Young. I mean, you know, like, I feel like everything happens for a reason. There's no doubt that stung a little bit. And the reason why I did is because I felt like the last – 2 months of the season, everywhere I went, you know, everyone was just basically saying that I'm the Cy Young winner,
right.
And Pat had a great year. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but like the last month of the season, they started pitching Pat on 3 days rest.
No, I
so
didn't.
He could get to
more
20
wins.
So he could get to 20 wins.
Were they in the playoffs or race?
They didn't have the playoffs.
He was in Toronto, right?
Yeah. I don't believe they were. I don't believe they were in the playoff
race. They
weren't, race,
no. Yeah.
But I know that he had pitched on 3 days rest so he could try to get his 20th, which, of course, you know, you want your players to try to get – that's a great milestone, you know? And so, anyhow, he had a great season. I think he had a little bit of a lower ERA than me.
Yeah.
I know he struck out more guys than me.
Yeah.
I was never a strikeout guy. So, you know, flip a coin, right?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I wish I would have won it.
Yeah,
that would have been great.
But you got the whole thing, though. You guys won the World Series.
No, yeah, for sure.
Like the
no.
year I won the Cy Young, I would switch it with Beckett right now and get my Cy Young up for another ring.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Like,
because you want
I wanted
07,
07 but he beat me in the playoffs
right.
in
yeah,
07,
no, right.
you know, to win the World Series.
Right.
So
right.
I'm like, I switched that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
You can have that Cy Young.
That's the right mentality right there. That's exactly how you should be thinking. You know, early in your career, you both had success. You know, maybe it happened. No, what was your? When did you start like really finding your groove, CC?
Me?
Yeah, was it your?
Not till like
30.
I mean, my first year, I won 17 games.
Okay, yeah.
But I was kind of like Andy in the way where I only threw a fastball and a curveball, and you know, when I first got drafted, I didn't even have a delivery. Like I just was throwing, you know, high school baseball. You know, just kind of pitching. I didn't really know how to throw a four-seamer, a two-seamer. I didn't know any of that stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, they had to start from scratch with me. And they taught me, you know, fastball, changeup. And, you know, I had like a big 12-6 curveball. But, I kind of developed in the big league. So the first year I won 17 games. Struggled the next year. I think I won like 13. And then not until like 2005 did I really like – when I was 25 years old, I was more mature. You know, I had – already had my two kids, and, you know, I've kind of, like, turned into a man, and did I really, like, turn it on the field.
Because I just feel like if you have that early success, right, like, what's the hard – because you both have had these incredibly consistently successful careers. But what's the hardest thing when you have it early to keep it going and stay consistent and
I
do
think
it year
the
after
hardest
year?
Thing, the hardest thing for me – what the hardest thing for me at that time was I had success, and I thought it was going to be easy. I was like, oh, I'm 17, like – I'm about to win 25 every year. Like. So, like, when I came back the next year and I struggled. I had a bad first half. I just think that fear of not pitching good that whole first half is kind of what fueled me to be able to be consistent, I guess, and want to be great, I guess, if that
makes
sense.
Put
in the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, also – you got to be constantly making adjustments too. Mm, you know, after the league sees you a little bit, you know, again, guys probably like, see, he's not making too many adjustments. You know what he's coming with. You know, he's coming with gas and good breaking ball. I mean, but that's number one stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that he's running out there. But for me, you know, you realize that as you continue on, you've got to figure out a way to pitch guys a little differently. And that's what I had to do. So that was the biggest thing for me is to make adjustments. And if you weren't making the right adjustments, you're getting knocked around, you know, and you can struggle. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to be surrounded with a bunch of great players on those Yankee teams, mm-hmm. you know. And then we always had great bullpens. I mean, I've said it. I mean, I was very blessed. And I'm a product of a lot of – you know, I feel like I had a great career and battled my tail off all the time, but just a great group of guys the Yankees always put around me and guys that were, you know, ready to compete and ready to get after it each and every day.
Who were guys that you, like, looked up to back then? Like, who was on the starting staff back then that you could, like, turn to and look up to?
Well, in the minor leagues and in AAA and stuff like that, guys that I, like it was a left-handed pitcher, right? And that was Jimmy Key. Mm-hmm. You know, he was up there. So in spring training, I mean, I would see him and talk to him and just be like in awe of him. I mean, I would just like watch him running around the field like when I was like in AAA and be like, what's Jimmy doing? You know, whenever the big leaguers were practicing or they would come over to the minor league complex or whatever. And so he was kind of the guy that I looked to.
Mm-hmm.
Did
you guys have a good relationship though?
We like, did. He was
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He would take me to play golf, you know. And 95 was a little different because there, you know, it was just a different club. I was the only rookie on
yeah.
the team at the beginning of the season. Jeet came up, Georgie came up towards the end of the year. Mariano came up and made a couple of starts
right.
and then got sent back down. So I was in 90 – like, I felt like I was, like, on an island all by myself. I mean, it was we had a rough a crew of characters. And, I mean, man, I was scared. And back then, you know, Buck, if you were a rookie, he didn't say a word to you.
He didn't talk to you.
He did not talk to me. Literally, I'd be standing in the outfield, and he would walk right by me and walk to the next guy that was standing 2 feet. Never said one word to me.
That's going
to
be nerve-wracking
experience.
It was
nerve-wracking. So, man, I'm telling you, like, I just kept my head down and just pitched. And there was really – kind of felt like I was somewhat on my own, you know?
Yeah.
And then in 96, we brought Kenny Rogers over, who didn't have a great, you know, Yankee career, didn't have a lot of success, but an awesome mentor for me as far as taking me under his wing and stuff like that, and just really a good guy for me to be around. And also John Wetland, some of those guys, Scott Brocious, you know, we had a really good group of guys.
In 96.
In 96, yeah. And guys that and by that time I had a good rookie year, you know, I felt really good about coming back and got off to a real good start in 96 after a solid rookie season. And then, of course, Derek was there. Mariano was there. And then
Bernie was there. When did Bernie come up?
Bernie was there. Bernie was up a couple of years before me. I think Bernie came up in 93, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Did you guys look at Bernie as like, because I remember Derek would talk about this sometimes. It's like kind of the, okay, he made it from the farm.
Right.
We can too.
Yeah.
Like the Yankees may not trade us then. Like
I'm sure he did as a position player. You know, I really didn't look at Bernie like that. I looked at Sterling Hitchcock.
Okay.
That was who I looked at.
Yeah. Because
he was the lefty that was right above me, and he was up there the year before me. And again, of course, you know, he's just a few years older than me, so I didn't look at him like I looked at Jimmy Key. I looked at him like that's my direct competitor.
I'm coming.
I'm going to be there, and hopefully he'll be there too, but yeah. I'm coming. And Sterling was a great friend of mine. We had a great time together in minor league and stuff like that, but that's kind of, you know, you see those guys get there, so that was kind of who I was looking at.
Did you guys pitch against each other in the 98 World Series in the clincher? Was he on the mound for San Diego that game?
No, they brought Kevin Brown back.
On three days. That's right.
Sterling pitched
game three,
and
yeah.
I ended up pitching game four.
And you pitched game four. Yeah. No, I mean, and you pitched a great game in game four. Obviously, that you guys spent a postseason together in 2000. I mean, you spent more than one postseason together, but you won a World Series together in 2009. What Andy has the most postseason wins of all time.
Yeah.
You had a ridiculous 2009 postseason yourself. What did you observe about like Andy in those moments and how he handled October?
Just
that
the
stood
calmness.
Out? Yeah.
I think, and it wasn't just him, it was everybody. It was Gino. I remember in that meeting. No, seriously, like I remember in that meeting, we had a meeting, remember in the media room across from the locker room.
And by the way, Gino is Gene Monahan.
Gino, the trainer.
Yeah.
Yep. He'd been there forever. And Gino stood up. He was like, it's 11 more wins. Like, I was a little nervous. Like, you know, we're getting ready to play the Twins. It's, you know, first postseason, it's Yankees. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Gino goes up and he stands up and is like, hey, it's just 11 more wins. And I'm like, oh, we got this. Like, we can win 11 more games. Like, you know, it's just the calmness about everybody at that time, I think, gives you confidence. I mean – and just watching the way, you know, he worked his routine, like, you know, throughout the season and, you know, ramping it back up for the playoffs and, you know, really being ready body-wise, I think, you know, made a huge difference for me.
Did you feel nervous at all in those postseason games as you even deep into your career after you had all the experience?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's always nerves. Every start.
Every start. Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah. Every butterflies.
Every start.
And you know what? I would feel bad about that until I saw him.
Yeah.
Because you were really nervous.
Yeah.
You know, all the time.
Yeah.
And that made me feel good about me being so nervous. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I got nervous the spring training, first game of spring training.
Man.
I couldn't even throw the first pitch. I was out there like shaking. It's just anytime you get out there.
Yeah, I mean, I go to the restroom on the day I pitch about four times within the 2 hours of you taking the mound. I mean, that's a nervous feeling.
That's on your Dave Burba checklist.
Nervous
right
stomach.
There.
Yeah, you ain't right if you ain't going to the restroom. That's the way I judged it. But I mean, that has to be there. I mean, if you don't have that, I don't think you're ready to go out and compete the way that what you're about to run into, you know, and so that's just our body just telling us you're about to go to work, and it's, I mean, look, we're not going to war. I mean, you know, it's not our life or death. We're not gonna, but that's the way that I wanted us to look at it. Like these dudes on this other side of this field, those guys in that batter's box are trying to take what I want. I mean, they want it. You know what I'm saying? And I want it too. And we got to, you know, you got to kind of beat them. But, man, you talk about that, you know, the nerves were there. But the nerves for me were so different from 2009 to whenever I first came up. You know, just there was so much the nerves were always going to be there, I think. But it was almost like a fear of kind of the failure, you know, early in my career. And that kind of drove you, and you know, you want to be so great, but in 09, it was so different because when we signed him and AJ, I mean, I was like, we're winning the World Series. I mean, seriously. I was just like, we're doing this. Especially when I had a chance to get to know C and the guys and AJ and I just I knew that he had the makeup to first of all to be able to do it and do it in New York, because obviously he had great success in the postseason. I think the year with Milwaukee, maybe the year before, was that right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I watched that and I'm like, man, give me this dude
yes.
on my staff.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And so just the confidence in 09, the nervous feelings were there, but I'm telling you, the team that I had around me, and I don't know if C, I mean, he may have felt the same way, but you kind of get in this zone like, dude, I am getting this done.
We're going to win.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I mean, and I think everybody kind of can feel that and kind of feeds off of that.
But like he said, like 09, I think we felt that the whole time.
Yeah.
From day one, from like jump. Like, that team was really good. I don't think we really realized how good we were. But we had swag. Like, I mean, it was – we were coming – we're going to beat you every day. Yeah. Like, you know, it was
– you won 103 games, didn't you?
Yeah.
It was a good team.
That was a good team they put together. And, like, even a good chemistry-wise, you know what I mean? It was a good bunch of guys. We, you know, we pulled for each other. It was a lot of fun. That was, you know, that was great to be around.
When you look at – it's amazing because there have been so many incredible Yankees teams, you know, obviously throughout the years. And Andy and you have been on some of them. But that 09 team, actually, you look at it historically, that's one of your top, you know, 6, 7, 8 Yankee teams. You go by different statistical outputs, and you look at how many either Hall of Famers, borderline Hall of Famers, Gold Glovers. That team was stacked. You were a great team. You didn't go to a Game 7 in any of your series. You know, you wipe out the Twins, Game 6. You pitched a clinching game.
Every one of those. Yeah, you pitched every series. One of them.
You know, we were talking about this with Derek. I wonder – if there's a game you could go back and relive and be in that moment again from your career, what game do you think it would be?
Oh, man. It has to be one of the bad ones, right?
Those are the ones you still think about, right?
That's the ones I'm still thinking about, 100%. It would be game one in 1996 of the World Series.
But who can you – wait, then you threw a gem in game 5.
I know it. But why didn't you throw a good one in game 1? I mean, if I could do it all over and if I just knew what I know now, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to pitch so good in that game because it was in Yankee Stadium, game 1.
Back in the World Series.
And, man, I didn't even remember what to do. I didn't even follow the scouting reports.
Because you tried to make the moment so big.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, horrible. And, I mean, thank the Lord I learned. But I'll tell you, I was talking with a couple of guys in the clubhouse yesterday about this. I wanted to do – after that start, okay – I wanted to do so bad in the home starts during the playoffs that I really struggled. It took me a few starts in the postseason, I feel like, at home to really get comfortable and be able to figure out how to control myself. On the road, it was so easy, I felt like, because you felt like everybody in the world was against you. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, you know, the crowd's just going crazy. From the get-go, people are just screaming and cussing at you in the bullpen while you're trying to get loose for the games. And so from the get-go, you're kind of going to – you got to go to this different place where you don't hear nothing and you're just totally locked in. Where at home, it was just like I was seeing everything and I was like, oh, you know, this is just so – you just totally – if that – you know – if there was one game, that would be the one. I would love to have that one over because it's
interesting.
Just you know, my first World Series start, and it was a stinker.
But like you said, though, like you have to learn. I mean, some people have it, you know, where they can just go out and be great right away.
Right.
But like I had to learn that too.
Yeah.
That skill of like staying in the moment, I guess, not letting it get too big, and not trying to do too much.
Yeah.
Because in 07, I had a great year. Won the Cy Young and all that stuff. And I was going to put that team on my back. Like, mm-hmm. I was – like, I had determined, like, this is going to be my world. This is going to be my postseason. Like, I'm doing everything. And it just got too big.
Yeah.
Like you said, I couldn't figure out how to pitch the Big Poppy. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm worried about
– you're not the only
trying
one.
Trying to dominate. Yeah. No, but I was just so worried about trying to dominate and become, like, this iconic, you know, playoff pitcher that I had to learn how to, like, slow it down and, like – really know what, you know, the moment is and how to kind of still go out and pitch and not try to do too much. And I think coming to the Yankees helped too because you don't have to do too much. You got great guys around you. You just let them do their job, you do yours, and you're going to win.
Like, does the reputation affect how you feel going on to the mound? In other words, I think about it with a guy like Kershaw, right? I mean, the guy, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But because of the postseason struggles, I always wonder, well, okay, does it become sort of a self
fulfilling
prophecy?
Thing. It's not a thing until you start believing it's a thing. Like,
right.
Until Price starts talking about it, it's a thing. It's the thing now.
Right.
It wasn't a year ago or 2 years ago, but now it is because he has to answer questions about it. And,
does that make it tougher then for him to just get out of it?
Of course it is.
For sure. And then could it work the opposite way where, okay, you're having a lot of postseason success and you're hearing like, hey, all right, it's a big game. We feel good with Andy. And then you're like, yeah, you know what? I feel good too.
Yeah.
Like, does it help then also if you're hearing good things?
100%.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think really matters what you're hearing.
Yeah.
It's how you're feeling,
really.
You know what I'm saying? Because there's just no doubt, like, the success that for me, especially my last three or four postseason, I felt like I really never had a bad outing. I was just, you know, so the more success you have, it's just like you're figuring out how to do it, you know.
You can keep it rolling,
too. And you can keep it rolling. And, again, right, it's all about controlling yourself in big moments and making those pitches. And you know how to do it now. You just feel extremely comfortable with getting yourself in a place to do that. Early in my career, too, I was talking about this. Another reason why I struggled a little bit at home, I felt like, is because the crowd will want you to get into it, you know. And, like, when you need a big out, you know what I'm saying? And I would, like, emotionally just be, like, ready to explode out there. But I can't pitch like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I got to be, like, relaxed and movement. I need my ball to move. And when I get, like, oh, I'm going to throw this ball. Everybody's standing up. I'm going to throw this ball by Andrew Jones right here. And it cuts right down the middle. Three-run home run, you know?
It's amazing how similar we are, though.
Yeah.
So, like, I can listen to him tell that story. I'm the exact same way. Like, I have to be relaxed.
Yeah.
I cannot be that football player mentality that I was when I was younger, and I had to learn that. Like, I would go – like, I remember it was this one time I was pitching against Boston. We were at home. It was, like, 2004. So, my fourth year in the league, you know, and it's not a big game, but, you know, it's Boston. So, Cleveland fans are showing up.
Yeah.
And I looked on the internet. I was going to, like, get some tickets for my uncle, and bam, right on the Cleveland website, it was, like, CeCe and Pedro. And immediately, I was like, oh, this is game 7 of the World Series. I got to, like, be great. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't be that tense. Like, just like the same exact same way.
Do you read clipping? Do you read stories about yourself ever?
No, man. I don't read stories, or I don't like to watch myself on TV.
Interesting.
I mean.
You don't ever watch back? Like, all right, wait. Like, let's say it's trying to think of one of your dominant games.
No,
like the ALCS, like against the Angels.
No, but I did. I was just telling him the other day when I had this bad stretch. And this is why, like, he's good for me, like, because he made me think, like, I had that bad stretch of four games this year where I was giving it up.
In May, maybe.
I started great, and then I had the four bad ones. And I don't watch video, and I hadn't watched any video. We flew into Chicago. It was really late, and the game was on. It was on ESPN. And I, you know, I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, man, you know, I don't know what's going on. They're hitting my cutter. I can't get it right. I can't get it in. And I watched the game. I'm literally throwing balls right down the middle. You know what I'm saying? So that gave me after watching that, it gave me confidence to be like, oh, okay, I'm actually really throwing balls down the middle. They're not hitting a good one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and he was like, well, maybe you should watch that, like, after the first
I said, he tells me that last night. Like, he tells me that last night to say, I'm like, see, maybe you ought to go watch a little video.
So you might have to watch yourself again.
Yeah,
exactly. What about you, Andy? Did you read, like, would you read anything newspaper-wise, story-wise?
You know what? I mean, I tried not to. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, obviously in New York, there's papers. Like, there'll be newspapers laying around everywhere.
And
you just see stuff. But I really didn't. I feel like I did a pretty good job in my career of just kind of staying right here on an even keel.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to be reading, you know, good stuff about me or if people were trying to say good stuff because I didn't want to get up here. But just because I knew what kind of a roller coaster ride it was, you know. And I don't – I'm fighting that inside myself already. I don't need to bring in outside distractions on or anything, you know. So, not really. I tried not to. I didn't.
You know what's harder now if, like, as a young player or as a player, period, is, like, your phone. Because you have the paper on your phone.
Yeah.
You have Instagram. You have, you know, Twitter.
Yeah.
So it's hard not to read stuff about yourself. You know what I mean? Like, it's really hard. Like,
my new thing when I broadcast a game, like, I will not check Twitter at all because first of all, nobody knows if I'm doing what I should be doing or not better than me and my producer, right? In your case is you or your pitching coach, right? And then like it's just, like if someone says like, "Oh, you suck." All right, well that's like easy to ignore. That's a troll, right? But someone could say something that's like, "Hey, why are you yelling? Speak more to me." And you're like, "Wait, am I?" Like, you know, like it gets in your head. Like if somebody said to you like, "Hey, like you're dropping your left arm slightly a bit. Wait, hold on. Am I like kind of, you know, like?"
So let me tell you, it was this one lady on Twitter, man. And her name was like Brooke Main or something like her handle. And she was like tweeting at me for this whole year. Oh, and man. I was literally reacting to everything she tweeted. Like, she was like, "Your uniform's too big. Are you dealing with the Robbie?" I was like, "Yo, I need a smaller uniform." Everybody says I'm skinny now. Like, my uniform's too big. Like, had me all. Like, I was like, I was going crazy. I was doing everything she said.
That's why you can't look at
that's
it.
Why I'm not,
look
at that's it. Why I'm not on Twitter.
No, you're not.
Only Twitter or Instagram.
There's no way. Honestly, right, we all in our lives, right, we want the most positive energy we can possibly have.
Yeah.
You don't get, like, in general, no, you get some funny and.
No, but in general, you don't get that
you
positive.
You don't get that. Yeah. You just don't. So why are we inviting it into. We're too addicted. Because I know me and you are on it. We got to follow the Andy path and just cut it out, man.
Are the boys on there a lot? They're on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're
Josh
all
and Jared on there.
They let me know everything
going on. What about
Luke?
Does he got a phone?
No, he doesn't have a phone
not yet.
Not yet. No. I'm holding out.
How you pulling that off?
I'm holding out, man. Phones are terrible.
Is he asking for a phone? No, he's 12 now,
every
right?
Every once in a while, yeah.
But you're with him a lot, though.
All of his friends have him. I mean, he just
he never asked yet?
Yeah, he asked. Everybody's got him, but sorry.
He's 12, man.
I don't care.
He's going to middle school.
Man, I tell you, those phones are for the devil. That's what I tell him. I said, phones are for the devil, man. I mean, phones
are terrible.
But what
about, like, dropping off at practice and stuff? Like,
yeah, just use somebody's phone if you need to call me.
Yeah,
that's how I had to justify. Like, I had to get Jaden the phone because she goes to dance, and, like, she's gone most of the evening. So I'm like,
how old is she?
She is 11.
Yeah, but that terrifies me. The thought of having to like deal with a 10-year-old with a cell phone.
I know.
I know.
You know what the hardest thing is? Is Lil C's a teenager now, and like everything sucks for him.
Yeah.
Like he won't talk. Like he's moping around, and like nothing excites him. I can't get him to like have a conversation with me no more.
It's
like,
tough.
That's just teenage years, huh?
It is, man. It's tough. My daughter's 16. And she's going through a little bit of that stage right now where I just like, man, come on. You're my little girl, you know.
Yeah,
she's
right.
Blowing me off. She's driving now, so she's running around doing her thing. But it hurts daddy. I can tell you that much.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
My feelings are hurting now. Because me and Lil C used to be like, that's my homie. And now he's got his buddies. The other day I walked by his room and then I heard him slam the door after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't look in here. What? Like, I walked by his room and I was looking in. He had a couple boys there. And so I keep going to my room, but I hear him close the door. I'm like, dang, am I bothering y'all?
You know, there are so many dads listening to this right now who are like, thank God it's not just me.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm holding out on Luke. Because me and Luke, we'll be sitting there watching TV with the family, and I'll look around. My wife's head, all I see is the top of her head. Lexi, all I see is the top of her head. You know, Josh and Jared, all you see is the top of their head. I'm like, what in the world is going on in here?
All into their phones.
Exactly.
But Luke's your boy. My man Luke.
He does have a little iPod whenever we're home.
I was about to say he's got to have something.
Yeah, when we're at home, he's got a little iPod. But, you know, that's not cool, really. You
know
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he'll get into it, like, for about a month. And then he'll forget about it for like 2 months and then he'll get back into it. But like right now, he's into it.
Like, what about like traveling and stuff? What does he do? Like when you guys travel?
Nothing.
Nothing?
He got nothing.
Man.
No, he's got nothing.
That's rough, man.
I hand him my iPad and I said, here, watch one of my movies that I have on my iPad.
But that's good. You know what? Nothing drives me more nuts than when I go out to dinner and I see like a family.
Oh,
and
no.
It's
you
everybody want on a device instead of talking.
No,
Like,
it's
how do you
terrible.
Build a relationship if you're not
no,
talking?
Sometimes me and Amber, like, if it's like a. If I've been on the road and we'll go to breakfast in the morning or something, I'm like, no phones.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying? Because she gets busy and emails and, you know, she gets, you know, it's crazy with her on her phone and stuff. So.
You
I'm like, no
that.
Phones, man.
Yeah,
so we
gotta
can just
do that.
Talk.
For sure.
Like,
you
can
do the Derek policy. Make them put their phones in a basket
in
when
the
they
basket,
walk
right?
into your house. I think he had a different reason for that back in the day. But, you know,
there
you
could
have that policy.
Is that what Derek collects cell phones
before
you
go? Exactly.
Before you get in his presence?
You know what? That's funny. You were around him forever.
Oh,
you guys
God,
grew
man.
Up together.
Yeah.
What I like about him is, you know, he's always polite, but he's genuine, right? But he's not like... He's not pretending with anyone, right? But did he get, was he always careful? Because he's, we know, he went through his whole New York career without a blemish.
Yeah.
Was he always that careful as a youngster?
Always been like that, yeah. As far as I could remember, for sure. Yeah, just, he was just always like that. Derek really didn't change his personality, did not change one iota, I don't feel like, from the minor leagues to the last year I played with him in New York. It's pretty incredible, the consistency that he's had.
That's his parents, though. His parents are impressive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, his sister and just, like, his upbringing. Like, he's just a solid, solid dude, man. Like, very genuine. Like,
what's something about him from knowing him? Because CeCe's talked about this, too. Knowing him as long as you did, that, like, maybe people would be surprised about. Or something about, like, the way he was. Like, for example, you ever see Derek, like, get on somebody in the clubhouse? Like, would he ever, like, yell? Did he ever do that kind of thing?
No. I mean, Derek never really did that. Not that I can remember. Let's put it that way. You know? Derek would talk, and he would say things and stuff like that. But, like I said, Derek was more just, you know, he'd go about things the right way, and he'd lead by example. You know? I mean, he didn't do a whole lot of yelling at people or anything like that. 100%, he'd grab guys, talk to guys, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. and try to deal with things in that sense, but wasn't his personality to be screaming or hollering or wanting to fight anybody. We left that up to Georgie. Georgie,
I was about to say that was Georgie. Sato thing.
Sato was ready to fight and drop a hat with anybody. So I love that. You wanted Sato on your side, that's for sure. You know,
I could just picture him trying to talk to Randy Johnson or something. I wasn't fortunate enough to see that.
But I'm sure it was interesting. Him or Kevin. I don't know if Kevin Brown was there too, right?
Oh my gosh.
Kevin Brown.
I can't. Right, those two, those two guys, I cannot imagine what that was like for Jorge.
Hey, him and El Duque had some great stuff going on.
I heard legendary stuff.
Legendary.
Right?
Like, I mean, El Duque come, I think, running with him, at him with a sledgehammer or something one time.
Some scissors or nice or something scissors. Too.
I mean, he was looking for anything to puncture Sato with, man.
Oh,
I think it ended up being like one of his protein shakes got thrown on top of Sato or something. It's crazy.
That's amazing.
Oh, it was amazing.
But what's incredible is the success those guys had together, as a tandem, with that.
Hey, we get hot, we get fired up. But listen, I mean, it's all about trying to get people pulling in the right direction, you know? And bottom line is Georgie loved him to death, and you just get fired up sometimes, man.
And Sato always thought he was right, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
He never called the wrong pitch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, after the inning, he would always want to talk about it. So I can see how guys would get annoyed. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you give up a couple runs. You don't want to talk about it. I don't talk about this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, we'll talk about it after the game. Like, just keep putting the fingers down. Like, but he never thought he was wrong. You know what I'm saying? So that could – I can see how that could be a problem.
And if I remember right, you kind of like the like stern direction.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
For sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, sometimes he would put down a sign and then not put out another sign. So that makes me believe in the pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like,
yeah.
You think that this is the right pitch. Okay, let's throw it. You know what I'm saying? So I really like that about him.
That's interesting.
And I think me and C, you're probably similar. He says that. I mean, sometimes we're not quite sure what we want to do, you know? And so just almost him verifying it, you know, almost would make me feel better about it, even if it wasn't maybe the pitch that I wanted to go to, you know?
For sure.
Of course, if you give up a hit, you're like, oh,
I should have never thrown that.
Stupid.
Why did I throw that?
Call.
Oh, my gosh. Why? I know. Exactly. Or you do it in a post-game presser, right? Like, yeah, you know, pitch selection was a little – that's
– Yeah.
Some guys – David Wells, I think, used to I think he would occasionally do that because he would just go with whatever the catcher was called.
Right.
Like, he was not going to shake off anything, right? So he'd just go with it. But then it might be like, in the post-game press conference, like, I don't know what we were thinking on the 1-0 pitch.
Like, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus.
Exactly, I mean, it's still my decision, but Andy, how much have you watched, this year's Yankees and some – let's bring up Judge and Sanchez specifically, and what you see from these guys.
You know, I haven't had a chance to watch him a whole lot. I try to follow him, but as far as being able to watch him on TV and stuff like that, it's a little difficult. Of course, if my man's pitching and it's on TV, I'm going to try to watch as much as I can.
Yeah.
But I've been able to follow him, of course, and see some of the highlights and stuff like that. In the mornings, I'll watch, you know, some of the highlights and stuff. And, man, it's just been really impressive. It's been fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
just no doubt. I mean, over the last few years, the team kind of, of course, not one negative shot by saying this, but it just, it wasn't a real energetic, fun team to watch.
Right.
And man, is it different. Yeah. I mean, it's just completely different. And to see those guys come up and young guys, and also guys, you know, now that I've been out, this is my fourth season that I've been out, I've been able, you know, the Yankees do such a great job of you know, bringing me down to spring training. And I hadn't been able to come to spring training much, I'm sorry, but like extended spring and instructional league and talking to the young players and stuff like that. So I've been able to see Aaron, you know, over the last few years, and some of the other guys come up. And of course, Sanchi, you know, he's been around for a while. But it's just been awesome just to see them come up and have the success that he's had, especially after the struggles that he had last year. You just love seeing, you know, the guy turn it around. And just a different approach and confidence. You just see him just confidence just flowing out of him. And it's just great to see. I mean, not only offensively, but I've seen him, like, what a great defensive player he looks like. He's out tools. There, too.
He really is.
It's impressive.
He's an impressive guy, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
He's a humble dude. He's a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah.
Like, very energetic. He's got the jokes. He goes back and forth with Guardy all the time.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun in that clubhouse now.
Yeah.
It's weird being an old man, but it's a lot of fun.
But what's great about that, too, and I stopped thinking about that, it's going to push guys like C. You know, cause, I mean, just saying it.
Of course.
Now that you're your age, because I was right there when you guys were all coming up, it has to give you energy, right?
Yeah, it just gives you like a second life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we plan for something now.
Yeah.
Not that we weren't before, but it's just a different kind of energy.
Like you said,
when me and AJ came kind of like, same thing with you, it's the same thing with these guys for me. Like, when we went through that last year and they traded everybody off and we were rebuilding, I mean, that's frustrating. We talked about it, you know what I'm saying? And I was trying to find motivation to go out there and pitch. I'm like, so what am I pitching for then if we're rebuilding? I mean, at this age now, you want to be playing for something, I feel like, you know? And these guys have turned that around again.
The success that CeCe's had, of course, I know him. I mean, he's not playing just to be playing this game right now.
Right.
You know? I mean, dude, you want to get after it. And, he's built to give me a chance for the postseason here, and I'm going to get it done. I know how he thinks. I know what can be done. So it makes it exciting. It brings a lot of energy to the team. Even those guys that are, you know, 33, 34, or whatever, I mean – this game is hard, and it is tiring, and it is exhausted, and a lot of it is emotional. And when you start bringing those guys up and they're having the success that they're having, it makes it fun for everybody. It re-energizes the whole franchise.
It really does.
You can feel it with the fans, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it does. And there's something also about the homegrown core as well, which obviously you were a part of for years, Andy. I mean, it's just like fans feel, you know, connected.
You feel connected to them because these are your guys.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It makes a huge difference. And I remember when I first got there, and I'll be watching Andy, like, during games that we weren't pitching. And he was living and dying with every pitch, you know what I mean?
And like, talking to himself like crazy.
No, not when he wasn't pitching, I'm saying.
Oh,
like,
okay,
we just
got
were sitting
you.
On the bench, and like, he really wanted to win those games. I didn't as much really get that. But now, like, I'm sitting on the bench now, and, like, every game, I'm like, this is playoffs. Like, I'm trying to get back, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, this is – It's fun. It's really fun to be a part of and see what the direction we're going.
What would be your advice, Andy, to CeCe, as someone who is in the latter stages of his career but is still effective pitching well, as far as like retirement, when to hang it up, when not to? Like what would be your advice for CeCe?
Different times.
Well, I know that. Yeah.
Kept coming back.
So, I knew you were coming back. Yeah.
That's right. It came back for a year and a half, right?
Yeah.
What was it? You were out for 11, came back for 12 and 13.
Yeah, I came back in 12.
Yeah.
And was having a good season, and I broke my leg.
That comeback.
Got hit with a line drive.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I can't go out like that.
Yeah.
The plan was just come back for 1 year and then, you know, get out of there.
We made the All-Star team that year.
In
2012?
In 12.
Yeah.
No,
10.
No,
10.
10.
2010.
The year I retired.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, my advice to him would be to go as long as you feel like you can. You know? And we've talked about it. I mean, C called me. I mean, we talk all the time, like you said. And I know he still feels good and still wants to keep going. And you should, because there's a lot of life to live still when you get done, you know? I mean, I feel like I had a long, long major league career. I've been out 4 years now. I just turned 45, and it's like, man.
Just turned
45. You're a young man in the real world.
Yeah. I just turned 45, and it's like, man, I got to do something. You know? And here I am. I mean, I'm coaching high school baseball, and you know, and everyone's different. I'm not saying. I mean, some guys. Jimmy Key. I asked him, "What are you gonna do, man?" He goes, I'm going to sit out by my pool and play golf every day. And I'm like, you're going to go crazy. And he goes, no, I'm not. I'm just fine.
That's basically what G does.
Yeah.
He's playing pool. I mean, playing golf every day.
And I mean, but Jimmy, I would see him 10 years later, and he's like, I'm good still doing it. You know what I'm saying? I don't need that now. You know what I mean? But I'm not built like that. I got I don't know if it's, I got ADD or whatever. I can't sit still.
You're a competitive guy.
He's got to be doing something.
I got to be doing something.
This last offseason or this last summer, you went to UConn?
Yep, I do. Weeks. So I get that. That's my fix. Yeah. You know, I love to do these hunts now that I go. So, you know, went to the UConn. I was there for 10 days. I went 9 days without a shower. Man, I was in a tent with just me and my guide, you know. And I'm going on another one next year.
Are you doing it again?
I'm gonna go. I mean, every other year I'm gonna try to go on one because it keeps me something to train for, you know. Yeah. I mean, I got to carry a 100-pound backpack around, and I mean, it's just stuff I enjoy hunting. You know?
This is not like a four-season safari. No.
This is like
you are really like. This is hardcore stuff.
I'm on a million acres up in British Columbia, you know, in the middle of the woods. Grizzly bears walking around me, wolves walking outside my tent in the middle of the night. I wake up, I look out, I got snow on the ground, and I got a big wolf print right outside my tent.
This sounds like Game of Thrones stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Like, no thanks, man.
Man, I loved it. I lost like 13 pounds.
He was
kind of crazy.
He was sending pictures while he was out there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's got to be like survival instincts coming in, too.
I mean, it was. I mean, but it was good. Like, we had food. We had the mountain house meals that you boil water and you pour them in there and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's just I get a thrill out of that. I love to hunt, and it's a challenge, you know, to go. And I hunt with my bow. It makes it even harder. You got to get closer to the animals.
With your bow.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So it's just a lot of fun. And it's beautiful country. It's stuff I've never had a chance to do while you're playing baseball, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that I'm doing now to kind of keep me going, man.
And the competitive fix is fulfilled with that?
Yeah.
Because you're going to need that too, right?
Yeah.
Like something to keep the competitiveness going,
right? I mean, not for a while.
Right?
I'm going
to
sit on the couch for a little
bit.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to just chill out for a little bit.
But I did that, and after a couple of years, you kind of want to start going. Yeah. You know? And I'm telling you, I'm in my high school game. We got knocked out this year. Last year, we won the state championship. This year, we got beat in the semifinal game in extra innings in the state championship. And I'm telling you, I call the pitches and stuff like that for our pitching staff, and it was like I had lost the World Series. It was like it was a loss. Like I had just lost the game. I felt the exact same way. And I had the butterflies before the game started, too, wondering. I wasn't even pitching. Is my starter going to be on right here? You know? It's crazy.
But that's awesome, man.
That's great that he gets that. Yeah. He still get that. Right. You know what I mean?
Like, well, because I feel like you know. All right. I played just through high school, right? I played wooden bat league in my college years. I still, if I'm playing like beer pong or something like that, I get that competitive. Well, you know, me and you with Papa Shot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like I need that competitiveness somehow. You guys, this is your lives. This is your careers. I feel like you got to find it somewhere. It's cool that you've been able to find it in that. That's awesome, man. Well, Andy, this is great, man. This is fantastic. Thank you for – now, what do you think? CeCe, he may have the career just in media, don't you think? He might be able to do
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's definitely – he going to go in. It look like he might be ready, but don't retire too fast.
No.
He's ready to go to broadcasting. But, man, I know C loves sports, and he's into all of them, and I know he loves talking sports, and he can talk shop a little bit, that's for sure. So,
that's right. Everything, man. I'm doing an NBA game getting texts from him. Like, yo, why aren't they passing to this guy? Exactly. But, Andy, thank you for doing this, man.
Yeah, you bet. I enjoy it, man.
Thank you, bud. Thank you. Appreciate it.
PlayersTribune.com.